The Civil Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Julia, please call the roll.
Chair Robinson.
Here.
Vice Chair Snyder.
Here.
Ranking Member Arrington.
Here.
Representatives Beltran. Black.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Daniels.
Here.
Gant.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo. Roth.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Julia. I want to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. Also, as a reminder for our members, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you're speaking and off when you're finished. I also request that you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before this committee. Today, we are considering six bills, HB 19, Individual Education Plans, HB 87, Lactation Space in Courthouses, HB 97, Domestic Violence, HB 237, Legal Instruments, HB 331, Liens and Bonds, and HB 6005, Relief for Robert Earl DeBow. We're going to start off with HB 237 by Representative Altman. Representative Altman, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 237 contains three legislative fixes recommended by the Real Property Probate and Trust Law section in the Florida Bar. One, it creates a definition in the online notarization statute to clarify that witness, as used in the Act, means the individuals whose electronic signature is affixed to an electronic record. Number two and four, expand the ability of a lender to obtain rental income from the third party's investors during foreclosure. Three, preserves the statute of superior liens in foreclosure. And I do have an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Before we get to the amendment, members, any questions on HB 237, the main bill? Seeing none, Representative Altman, you are recognized to explain your amendment, barcode 847911.
This is a clarifying amendment. And the substance of the bill remains the same. The amendment will conform the House bill to the Senate bill. And basically ensures that the defined terms witness and mortgagor are not used in their own definitions to define them, and restores the word defendant, where bill drafting had replaced it with mortgagor throughout the substance.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, any public testimony on the amendment? Any debate? Representative Altman, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close.
Having waved close, all members in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Anyone opposed? Show the amendment has been adopted. We're now on the bill as amended. Any public testimony? We do. French Brown, Real Property Probate and Trust and Law Section. Waves in support. Is that all we have? Members, we're in debate. We're in debate on HB 237. Seeing none, Representative Altman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I waive close, Mr. Chairman.
Having closed on bill, let's see here. Closed on the bill. Julia, please call the roll.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo. Roth.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show HB 237 reported favorably as amended. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next up is Representative Tant, HB 19, Individual Education Plans. Representative Tant, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Snyder and Ranking Member Arrington, for taking up this bill today. I appreciate it. Committee members, some of you will remember this bill from last year. It passed three committees and the full floor, but didn't make it through the Senate, and I thank you for your votes from last year, and I hope you'll do the same this. Students, so for many of you who know, I have a child who is developmentally disabled, and so I faced this myself when he was in school. So students with an IEP can stay in school until their last day of their 21st year. up to 22, essentially. However, once these students turn 18, the rights and responsibilities regarding educational information and decision-making transfers from the parent to the student, because under the law, they are an adult. That means legally that parents can no longer participate in legally binding IEP meetings, can't sign permission slips, can't know when their loved one is off campus for a workplace learning experience job site, or even help make expensive post-secondary collegiate or vocational educational decisions with their loved one. So this bill requires schools to inform parents a year before they turn 18 that they can sign an informed consent with the school district so that they can continue to be involved with their loved ones' lives while they're finishing out their school until 22. Alternatively, they can execute a power of attorney or use already existing guardianship advocacy and guardianship statutes in Florida law. This is an alternative to guardianship during those educational years up until the last year a child is 21 and has no physical impact to the state, but it does save families money, because many families like me had to rush to guardianship, pay thousands and thousands of dollars to go through that process, and also do it without knowing the full range of options out there. So this is going to help a lot of families. Members, that is the bill.
Members, any questions for Representative Tand on HB 19? Seeing none, we have an amendment.
Yes, sir.
Representative Tand, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 005409.
This amendment simply authorizes the Department of Education to adopt rules to implement the bill, which will allow for, hopefully, a uniform letter of consent across school districts. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any questions from members on the amendment? Seeing none, we have no public testimony. Any debate? Or is it Ranking Member Arrington, you recognize and debate on the amendment.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. No.
That's all right. That's right. Any debate on the amendment? Representative Tant, you're recognized to close the amendment.
Wave close.
Having waived close, all members in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Anyone opposed? Show the amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Do we have any public testimony on the bill as amended? We do. Alice Kersey, the Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support. Rose LaChapelle, I'm sorry about that, Democratic Women's Clubs, waves in support. Jean Snyderberger, waves in support. Joanne DeVries, waves in support. Mary Daly, waves in support. James McFadden, waves in support. Margaret J. Hooper, Florida Developmental Disabilities Council, Inc., waves in support. Thanks for circling it, too. Sometimes I can't tell what you're checking. Karen Mazzola, Florida PTA, waves in support. Trish Neely, League of Women Voters, is a proponent. Is Ms. Neely here? She waves in support. Olivia Babis, Disability Rights of Florida. Ma'am, when you're ready, you are recognized.
Can you hear me, or do I need to use one of the side mics?
I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry.
Let me put that mic a little bit further down there.
Here we go. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Tant. We have been working with Representative Tant for the past couple years on this bill. We're just speaking for informational purposes. Just because of concerns with the bill that aren't anything to do with the representative, but more of how our current statutes are written. The intent of the bill is, of course, to avoid unnecessary guardianships. That's absolutely something we want to happen in Florida. We've seen way too many students that are caught up in the school-to-guardianship pipeline. As Rep. Tant mentioned, when students turn 18, the schools often are telling parents, you need a guardianship in order to make any decisions about your child's education. The problem with this is guardianship strips people of all of their rights. So this is an extreme overreaction for a child that may just need some support making educational decisions or want their parent to stay involved with those educational decisions until they finish school, but they want to make their own life choices after the fact. And guardianship strips them of all of that, and the schools unfortunately don't always inform parents the rights that they're removing from their child when they do seek a guardianship. You can see how this would be very problematic. So the options listed in the bill are the options that are currently in state statute, which are FERPA release forms, powers of attorney, guardianship advocacy, and guardianship. So of those four options, two of them involve guardianship. It is beyond the scope of this bill, of course, to fix our guardianship statutes. But for this to work the way it's intended and to be effective, this is something that we need to start looking at moving forward, that we have other options for students with disabilities to keep their parents involved in those educational decisions without stripping them of their rights. We don't have an educational proxy statute in Florida. We don't have supported decision-making in Florida. So these are not options that are provided by the bill because they're not legally recognized in statute. So we support the intent of the bill, and we would like to work with Rep. Tant moving forward for other options that will let parents stay involved in educational decisions without stripping students of their rights. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. That's all the public testimony cards that I have. So we are in debate. Ranking Member Arrington, you're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairman. I was a little eager to talk in favor of this. I've been a co-sponsor before, but just want to thank Representative Tan for her advocacy and also her determination, as always. She brings firsthand knowledge on this situation, and I have learned a lot from her over the last couple of years, and I look forward to learning more and hope that we can get this across the finish line this year so we don't have to hear this one again. Thank you so much.
Representative Soror, you recognize in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I want you to know how much I admire you. We've had the opportunity to work together a couple of years now, and I think I heard this bill last term in healthcare. We served on Health and Human Services together. And to our new members, I want you to understand that Representative Tant is an authority on these matters, and she pours her heart and soul into these bills. She has a mastery of the subject matter. This was a good bill last year. It's a good bill again this year. And I hope that this is the year we can get it across the finish line. So thank you so much for bringing it up again. And thank you for your passion and all your hard work on the subject matter.
You're going to make me cry. Thank you.
Representative Odorf, you're recognizing debate.
Well, I'd like to continue the Allison Tant Admiration Day. I'm so proud of you and for bringing this forward. I know how much this touches your family. I know how much you care about how many folks out there have a similar issue. Mm-hmm. And when I read through this legislation last year, I was for it. I'm 1,000% for it this year. I thank you so much for having the wherewithal to come back, to bring it forward. I know it's a tough situation when your bill doesn't get all the way across the finish line. It just means so much to you. You have carried this well. I thank you so much. It's an even better bill this year. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to helping you to deliver it to the governor's desk. Thank you so much for bringing it forward.
Thank you.
Representative Maggard, you're recognized in debate.
Rep. Tant, thank you. We've talked about this in the past. Good bill. I just hope the Senate watch and does their job, because I think it will go through this House. So good job, and don't keep fighting.
Thank you.
Further debate? Seeing none, Representative Tant, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Well, first of all, I do have a great Senate sponsor this year. Corey Simon and I are sponsoring this bill together. Secondly, in response to this, first of all, some of the concerns that Olivia raised, this is absolutely going to have a really good effect for families. Right now, at least one of the lawyers that I know that does this work in Leon County has four guardianship cases on her desk just because the parent and the student want each other involved in the going forward decision making. That is something that families should not have to be compelled to go do just so they can stay involved with their loved ones' lives up until they graduate from high school. So with that, Mr. Chair, I close.
Representative Tan, having closed in her bill, Julia, please call the roll on HB 19 and announce the vote.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo. Roth.
Yes.
Soror.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 19 are approved favorably as amended. Next up, members, HB 97, Domestic Violence. Representative Cassell, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Representative Ranking Member Arrington. On May 21st, 2001, after months of being subjected to escalating and alarming patterns of intimidation and threatening behavior from the father of her son, Allie Kessler sought help from the court system and applied for a domestic violence injunction. Allie requested that the court temporarily remove her son from his care as she feared for Grayson's life. She feared he was in imminent danger. But Grayson's father was smart, you see, because his escalating threats of intimidation and danger were directed at Allie and not Grayson. Due to the gaps in our current law, Allie's request to remove Grayson was denied, and sadly, Allie's worst fear was realized when Grayson was killed by his father just hours after the request was denied. HB 97 is the unfortunate product of the tragic death of Grayson Kessler. Grayson's mother, Allie, is here today to share her story. Before she does, though, I want to tell you what this bill does. First, Florida statutes provide that parental responsibility for a minor child shall be shared by both parents equally, unless there is a finding of detriment to the child. But the statute and current law lacks any real guidance for the courts to apply when determining what detriment to a child is. This bill provides several factors for the courts to consider, including evidence of domestic violence, sexual violence, neglect, abuse, abandonment, or neglect, or reasonable cause to believe that either the parent or the child is in imminent danger of becoming a victim of any of these. This bill includes those same factors for the courts to consider when establishing or modifying a time-sharing agreement. Second, Florida statute provides that a person can seek an injunction for domestic violence when either a domestic violence act has occurred or when the petitioner has reasonable cause to believe he or she is in imminent danger of becoming a victim of domestic violence, and provides a list of factors for the courts to consider. This bill expands the existing factors to be considered to include when a person is engaging in a pattern of abusive, threatening, or intimidating behavior. Grayson's law extends beyond acts of abuse because not all abuse is physical. While this specific situation involves a father harming his child, we know that this issue goes both ways. By placing these factors into statute, we will provide better guidance to courts when deciding these often difficult and sometimes dangerous situations, when in turn we will help protect Florida's families, especially our children, and help prevent senseless tragedies like Grayson's from happening again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the bill.
Representative Cassell, having explained her bill, members, questions? Questions on HB 97. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Representative Cassell, thank you so much for coming and seeing me and having a discussion. And we talked about this yesterday. One of the areas, as the non-lawyer in the room with some questions, was basically talking about, as we look at the action that actually helps to keep the child safe in the determination that there is potentially some domestic violence. I had concerns, as you know, about that leading into a evidentiary or using it as a trial, if you will, of saying that this person is in fact guilty of domestic violence. Can you just touch on that a little bit and assuade what my thoughts were on that? I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Cassell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Overdorf, for the question and for the time you spent yesterday. So I think it's really important to note that current law as it stands, when the court is looking at determining what a time-sharing schedule should look like, as well as shared parental responsibility, the court already takes into consideration evidence of acts of domestic violence, whether or not there is a conviction or not. So the courts already are utilizing that information in the event that it's present, because that evidence is necessary to determine what is the best interest of the child. And when we're evaluating these types of cases, the courts are always looking at them through the lens of what is in the best interest of the child. So the courts are already utilizing evidence of this type of behavior in the family, regardless of whether or not there is a conviction. All Grayson's Law does is extend that, again, we look past just acts of abuse, but we also look at, you know, increasing excessive patterns of behavior, of intimidation, of threats, of manipulation and control, because, again, not all abuse is physical.
Further questions? Seeing none, let's move into the amendment. Representative Cassell, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 426577.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a technical amendment. There were some lines omitted in error. I would like to thank staff for pointing that out. We simply put existing law back in, and that is the basis of the amendment.
Any questions on this amendment? Seeing none, no public testimony. Any debate on the amendment? Representative Cassell, you're recognized to close your amendment.
I waive close.
Having waived close, all members in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Show the amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Public testimony. Allison Kessler. Ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you all for hearing me today. I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm here on Valentine's Day fighting for my greatest love. It has now been just over a year and a half since I buckled in, said I love you, and waved goodbye to my baby boy for the last time. The pain I endure daily is gut-wrenching, and I wish this on no other parent. So when people say to me, "You're so strong, Allie," the truth is, I'm not. I just don't know what else to do. Since Grayson's Law was first introduced last year, I've had some time to really think about what went wrong, what could have helped, and what could have saved us. And when I say us, I'm talking about Grayson and I, because I died that day too. I set up a website to share my story and add resources for other parents called Grayson'sChoice.org, and I can't even tell you how many emails and messages I get daily from parents seeking advice because they're going through something similar and fear for their child's life. And I just tell them, until there's laws in place to protect our children, there's nothing that I can do. My son Grayson Kessler was 4 years old when his own father murdered him during his court-ordered parenting time in the midst of a high-conflict custody battle in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I was a single mom from the very beginning. Grayson's father wanted nothing to do with us until he filed paternity when Grayson was 6 months old and got 50% joint custody. I was in an ongoing battle to protect my son despite years of evidence, including death threats, degrading text, violations of our signed agreements, refusals to pay for school activities, refusal to agree on anything, and then finally, cyberstalking and placing tracking devices on my car, which I also found and reported to my local police department for evidence. Apparently, he'd been tracking my every move for months. Knowing that I had to do something because the threats were escalating out of control, the day before Grayson was murdered, I went down to the courthouse to file a domestic violence injunction, which could have saved Gray's life. 2 hours after filing the injunction, it was denied, stating that the threats were directed to me and not my child, and that there simply wasn't enough evidence. Even though I provided a 250-page document and I wrote in big letters that I fear for my life, but most of all, I fear for my son's. One of the texts that I got right before he was murdered, it said, "I want to see your head separated from your body." Apparently, that wasn't enough evidence. On the morning of May 21st, 2021, I called for a police escort to pick up my son because he was not in school for 2 days. And there have been no replies or texts and voicemail I'm sorry, and the phone went right to voicemail. When the police arrived, they literally told me that there was nothing that anyone could do because this was technically a custody matter and that I would have to file for an emergency pickup order through the courts if he was found. I said, well, this is a missing child because I believe he's in grave danger. And I told them about the tracking device, and they finally agreed to knock on the door. They came down and said nobody answered. I then filed for an emergency pickup order, and that she was denied. Throughout the course of the day, I called the Broward Sheriff's Office, Child Protective Services, the Fort Lauderdale Police, DCF. Nobody would help, stating the boy is just with his father. He's not missing. They said, we can't just break down a door because more than five people reported that they believe that they were hurt inside because it's a liability. I asked for about six wellness checks that day. And again, all they did was knock on the door and say nobody answered. I told them, I believe my four-year-old is either dead or trapped inside the apartment. They need to go in. Grayson's father's family from New Jersey also called the Fort Lauderdale police and said that they believe their brother is dead in the apartment with a child. And the police said, belief without reason was not enough to break down the door. They literally told me that they cannot send anyone else out for a wellness check until the next day. At 11 p.m. that same night, I hired a locksmith. I located the owner of the condo who lived out of state, and I coordinated with the police to go open the door. I heard nothing from anyone until 5 a.m. when five detectives and a priest walked through my door and told me they found Grayson and his father with gunshot wounds to their head. Despite 4 years of trying to get protection, I was failed by multiple lawyers, mediators, custody evaluators, and three judges. The following day, I received by mail that my stalking injunction was approved and deemed credible, and that a hearing was set in 2 weeks. That alone says that they believe that the father was a threat to me, Grayson's mother. But he should be okay to his kid. That is not okay because no human being should have a child in their custody that is harmful to another human being, especially the other parent. If my DV injunction had been approved, Giggs would not have gone to his father's that night. Giggs could be alive today. His death was 100% preventable, but our current laws and procedures are 100% flawed. Child safety apparently comes second over parental rights, and judges need proper training in this type of abuse where there are no physical scars. A checklist needs to be in place when red flags are prominent, and it's all up to us to begin this much-needed reform, because tragically, Grayson's story is not unique. Each year, 58,000 children are court-ordered into the custody of a dangerous parent. More than 500,000 children are ordered to be with a parent who emotionally, physically, or sexually abuses them by a family member. Over the last decade, approximately 900 children have been the victim of filicide. If passed, Grayson's law can help other families and other children have a fighting chance. Because if Grayson had a choice, he would have chosen to live, and I would still be a mom. And that's her story.
Ms. Gessler, thank you so much for your brave testimony. You know, unfortunately, nothing we do will fill the hole in your heart, but to give the testimony you did and an issue that is so important, I thank you on behalf of all the members of the committee.
Well, thanks for listening, because I think it's important to the whole story, not just little excerpts.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Joanne DeVries, she's a proponent. Mr. Vries, are you here? She waves in support. Mary Daly waves in support. Jean Seidelberger waves in support. Rose LaChapelle, the Democratic Women's Club. If you're here, ma'am, recognize. I don't see Miss. Oh, she's here. Ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you. I'm the legislative analyst for Women, Family, and Children's Issue for the Democratic Women's Club of Florida. And I just urge you to support this bill. The story you heard should never happen again. And you have the power and you have the heart to change this and to change this law. So please do. Thank you.
Thank you. Katrina DeVerhas, Florida Fair Courts. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Robinson, Vice Chair Snyder, Democratic Ranking Member Arrington, and members of the Civil Justice Subcommittee. My name is Kat Dusterhaus. I'm a resident of Miami, and I'm here representing Florida Fair Courts, which is a group of thousands of Florida citizens who want to see reform in our family court system, starting with Grayson's Law. As Ali mentioned, more than 58,000 children a year are ordered into unsupervised contact with physically or sexually abusive parents after divorce in the United States. And for context, that's over twice the yearly rate of new cases of childhood cancer. This is a huge problem. As an organizer for Florida Fair Courts and as a member of the sexual assault response team of Martin, St. Lucie County, Palm Beach County, and Miami-Dade counties, I hear the horror stories of protective parents in Florida who are being failed by our family courts. We need reform now. Can you imagine being forced to hand over your child to someone you knew was abusing them or someone who had threatened your life? The wheels of justice move slowly, and in situations where a child is being abused or worse, as was tragically true in Grayson's case, every minute counts. Give judges the ability to act quickly and temporarily pause unsupervised visitation when there's good reason to suspect one parent is a danger to the child or their co-parent. Please vote yes on Grayson's Law and protect kids like Giggs in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you. Roxanne Edie. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Robinson, Vice Chair Snyder, Democratic Ranking Member Arrington, and members of the subcommittee. I want to thank you all for allowing us to speak here today. My name is Roxanne, and I live in Lake County, Florida. I was in an abusive relationship, or I should say my marriage, for many years. And when I decided that that separation needed to happen, I never envisioned what I would go through and what my children would go through. I was a stay-at-home, homeschool mom, and I always loved and protected my children and family. During the temporary custody hearing, the judge heard my testimony regarding the abuse and still ordered 50-50 custody. Shortly after the 50-50 custody began, my ex-husband began physically abusing my son, and multiple pediatricians made reports to DCF concerning sexual abuse against my daughter. When we had our final trial a year later, all of this was brought to the attention of the court. I testified regarding my abuse, my son regarding his, even providing picture evidence and documentation. And they also were given information about the DCF record. However, the judge signed a unilaterally written order by opposing counsel that awarded my abuser and my children's abuser 80% custody. And so I'm here to ask you all to please pass Grayson's Law, because if Grayson's Law was in place, it would have saved Grayson Kessler and it may still be able to save my children. And for those of you who consider yourself people of faith, remember Matthew 18:10. Be careful. Do not think these children are worth nothing. They have angels in heaven who are with my Father. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Philip Waterberg, Family Law Section of the Florida Bar. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Robinson. I thank the committee, and especially I thank the bill sponsor, Representative Cassell, for involving us within the Family Law Section of the Florida Bar in the process of coming up with this good legislation that's before you today. By way of introduction, I'm currently the chair of the Statewide Family Law Section, which is a body of mostly family law attorneys, numbering about 4,000 total attorneys. We represent all sides. And I don't say both sides, we represent all sides, not just a mother, not just a father. We represent the guardian ad litem. We represent the judges and the magistrates. And by the way, I happen to be a magistrate as well, on that side, trying to make decisions that help Florida's families. And at the end of the day, that's what the Family Law Section is about. We are striving to improve the law so that we're helping Florida's families. Ms. Kessler's story, unfortunately, is not a unique story. We support this bill because we believe, as the bill is currently written, that it will provide better protection for Florida's families by providing needed clarity and guidance in these very difficult cases to two particular statutes involved on a day-in, day-out basis in family law matters, the Chapter 6113 statute that courts rely on for making time-sharing and parental responsibility determinations, but also in Chapter 741, which is the domestic violence injunction statute, the statute that allows courts to issue orders of protections to keep Florida's families safe from abusive situations. The imminent danger standard has existed for many years as a standard for injunctive relief, alongside the other standard, which is actual victim of domestic violence. Those are the criminal acts. But what we're talking about really with this bill are those other bases, if you will, for injunctive relief, which is the imminent danger standard, and it has been well recognized in Florida law for some time now, decades. We believe this bill will help to strengthen that standard. It provides additional consideration for what the term detrimental means when courts are asked to find that shared parental responsibility would be detrimental if awarded to a particular parent in a family law proceeding. It also allows for this to happen without the necessity of a criminal conviction. And that's important because oftentimes these matters don't go all the way to a criminal conviction. A lot of times, for whatever reason, families resolve their issues prior to it going all the way to a trial for a criminal conviction. But this allows for that consideration of domestic violence in those situations without the necessity of a criminal conviction. It further clarifies what a court can be considering under a currently existing factor, factor M of our time-sharing factors, when making that determination of how much time a child or children are going to spend with a particular parent. So this isn't adding a factor. This is just clarifying that factor of what it is that a court should be considering when addressing the evidence that is provided and the proof that is being given regarding domestic violence existing within a particular family. Third, and perhaps most importantly, it provides under the statutory framework for the issuance of domestic violence injunctions and orders of protection, it adds one more factor to the currently existing factors. It allows courts to consider whether a party has or had engaged in a pattern of abusive, threatening, intimidating, or controlling behavior. It puts those terms into the domestic violence chapter for courts to consider as a basis, and to rely on as a basis for issuance of an order of protection. It's clear, an order of protection is not indefinite. An order of protection, they're meant to be for a time certain that is determined by a judge, and they are held to a relatively low modification standard. So they're not terribly difficult to modify in the future. But again, what we're talking about is something that can be entered right away to help fix a crisis, in a particular family that involves violence or the threat of imminent violence. Again, this bill, as I stated earlier, provides needed clarity and guidance for these determinations under both Chapter 61 and Chapter 7740.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say to the bill sponsor, I want to say thank you for this bill. It's definitely not an easy topic to discuss about. As you can see, not a dry eye was left in this room. So thank you for your courage and your strength. And I want to say to Allison, you know, from the moment that I met you, your courage, your ability to be here and keep coming back it's so galvanizing. And I know you, in your testimony, you stated that, you know, the day you lost your son, you lost yourself. But as I sit here and I watch you and I hear you speak, your son lives so strongly through you. And I'm sure he's looking down, smiling at you, at the amazing work that you are doing. And so this bill not only shows that his name will live on, but he will protect so many other children and giving the court system the ample ability to make the right decisions so that this doesn't happen again. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Representative Odorf, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. We don't know where our kids are gonna take us. Allie, thank you for your courage and for allowing your son to teach us and allowing us to modify some things that should have been changed a long time ago. And I'm sorry that we weren't able to see that before. Thank you for picking this bill as your first one. And I hope we get support all the way through to the governor's desk. Thank you.
Further debate. Representative Michael, you're recognized in debate.
Representative Kessler, thank you so much for bringing this forward. I'm so sorry that we have to hear something like this. And I want to say to Grayson's mom, I'm very sorry. I've been where you are. And I think we are just, all of our hearts are just wrenched because if only we could have prevented this from happening. But I want to give you words of strength to keep fighting. I once sat where you sat and gave testimony. And after I've done all I could, I had to do more. And that's why I ran to be where I am now. And I'm not saying that that's your path, but never stop fighting for your baby. Thank you so much.
Representative Lopez, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a victim of domestic violence for almost 17 years, I congratulate you to propose this bill. I am very proud of the moms that today testified about this experience. It's really a nightmare when you have to share custody with a person that you know. It's not right mentally, and it's a violent person. So thank you so much for this bill, and I'm so proud of the moms that were very brave to keep advocating, even though they experienced this type of sad situation. So thank you, and I am 100% in support of this bill. Thank you so much.
Representative Daniels, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for this awesome bill. There's a scripture that says that we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. And this is so touching, but I just want to say I believe that Grayson is watching, and I'm proud to vote up on this bill, and thank you for doing such a great job to look out for for family members, because family is everything right now.
Further debate? Representative, thank you, as my colleagues have said, for bringing this bill forward. I see Senator Book in the audience. Thank you, Senator, for joining us today. And, you know, thank you for your advocacy, and thank you for the picture of Grayson that you gave me in your kind note. I will always remember him and that picture. Thank you for the work you're doing, and as Representative Oberdorf said, this is a tough issue on your first bill, but congratulations on that. You're recognized to close.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair, Ranking Member Arrington. This is a heavy lift as a freshman. I remember when we heard the news of Grayson's death in our community, and as a mom to a seven-year-old, I can't imagine this loss. But today we have an opportunity to show the world that we can work together, that we are here to do right by our families in Florida, and to make sure that Grayson's untimely, tragic, sad death won't be the same fate of another child. I want to thank Allie Kessler for her support in allowing me this huge responsibility to carry this bill. That responsibility is not lost on me. And I will work hard to ensure that this bill this year passes the finish line so Allie can do the hard work that she wants to do, which is help other families. This is a good bill. Thank you all for speaking with me, to listening to the victims today, hearing their stories, and I look forward to receiving your favorable support.
Representative Cassell having closed in her bill, Julia, please call the roll on HB 97 and announce the vote.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show HB 97 reported favorably as amended. Congratulations. Well done. Our fourth bill for consideration, members, is HB 6005, relief for Robert Earl DeBow, State of Florida, by Representative Duggan. Representative Duggan, you're recognized to present your bill. And welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be back. Members, HB 6005 is a claim bill for Robert Earl DeBow, who was wrongfully incarcerated for 37 years, including 3 years on death row. Mr. DeBow maintained his innocence from the moment of his arrest and for the entirety of his incarceration. In late 2020, following a comprehensive investigation, a conviction review unit in his state judicial circuit determined that not only did Mr. DeBow not commit the crimes for which he was incarcerated, as the DNA evidence excluded him as the assailant, it actually identified the perpetrator through the combined DNA index system maintained by the state. This conviction review unit issued a lengthy and detailed report concluding that Mr. DeBow's convictions should be vacated and that he should be exonerated of all charges. This claims bill awards compensation in the amount of $1.85 million, representing the state statutory amount of $50,000 per year for each year Mr. DeBow was wrongfully incarcerated. That is the bill.
Members, any questions for Representative Duggan on HB 6005? Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Duggan, thank you for this, bringing this claim bill forward. I understand it's, you know, this is how you have to do it. How do you start the process of a comprehensive reinvestigation of this type? How does someone get this started? Can you give us some of the details, please?
Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this instance, Mr. DeBow contacted the Innocence Project, which is a nonprofit entity that helps identify inmates who would be potential candidates for this review. And then within the circuit of in which the conviction was obtained, they can ask the state attorney to re-examine the records. in this particular circuit and in others, including the Fourth Circuit that I represent a portion of, the state attorney, the chief prosecutor, has set up what's called a conviction review unit or a conviction integrity unit, in which they are able to pull the files, review old evidence based on the facts and circumstances presented to them as to why they should do that. And they make that discretion that falls within prosecutorial discretion. And in this instance, the state attorney did that review, and there was a lengthy investigation. And the DNA evidence that they were still, fortunately, in storage, again, not only exonerated him, this is not a situation in which a conviction was overturned on a technicality and it's unclear what happened. This man is innocent, and they identified the actual assailants who were in prison on other charges and had samples of their DNA in this database index. So that's how it worked out in this instance. So that's the extent of my knowledge of how it works.
President Roth, recognized.
Thank you, Chair, for that follow-up. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm probably not asking this the right way, but do you have to go to somebody like, I don't know, the state attorney in that county to start the process over? Or, you know what I'm asking? Where do you enter into the process? Is it the county in which that person was incarcerated, taken to trial? You understand my question?
Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do. And I'm not an expert on this. And my hope is that there might be other public speakers in the public comment section who could answer that question, because I'm sensitive to not giving out incorrect information over the Florida Channel. I don't mean to be flip. I mean, I don't want to mislead anybody. I know that there is obviously within the criminal justice system a procedure to seek what's called post-conviction review, in which you allege errors, omissions, improprieties in the process of your conviction. And so I know that that would be a vehicle and a forum to seek that relief. Other than that, I'll find out, and I'll make sure that you have the answer to that question, but I don't want to speculate because I don't want to get anything wrong.
Further questions? Members, we also have the Special Master, Caitlin Mon, here as well in the front row, if anyone has any questions for the Special Master. Any questions? Representative Maney, you're recognized.
Let me preface the question by saying I support the bill and was co-sponsor the first time the bill was introduced, but is there civil litigation currently pending? And if so, if that litigation is favorably decided in Mr. Dubois' interest, what's the result of that litigation in this claims bill?
Representative Duggan, if you can take that, you're welcome to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that, yes, there is civil litigation against the Tampa Police Department. I don't know the status of it. I don't know if it's been held in abeyance. I'm sure the Special Master can weigh in on that based on her review of the record. But I will, to answer your question, with respect to what happens if he prevails in that action, Section 7 of this claim bill provides for essentially what I will shorthand as a set-off of any amounts recovered in that civil litigation, where this amount of money would have to be refunded to this. If this bill passes and is funded, and then he recovers in his civil action, he doesn't get to double dip. There will be a set-off for the amounts recovered. But I don't know if the Special Master wants to add anything to that.
Ms. Money, you have anything to add?
Thank you, Chair. I would just add that it's my understanding from the record that the civil matter is in the discovery phase right now, where they're gathering evidence and disclosing potential witnesses.
Thank you. Further questions?
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, we have no amendments. We'll move into public testimony. Aaron Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waves in support. Robert Dubois, excuse me, sir. You are recognized, sir.
Mr. Chairman and
members of the committee. I humbly express my gratitude to you all for hearing this today. It's been a long process, of course. And I thank Mr. Duggan for bringing it to your attention and others who have helped in the past. You know, as you know, I was incarcerated for 37 years for something I didn't do. So since I've been out, I've been working mostly two jobs. So I work at a country club doing their maintenance, and then in the evening I work doing repairs and renovations as they come up. So right now I'm just in the process of moving forward and trying to put my life together.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. That's all the testimony I have, members. We are in debate. Anyone wishing to debate on HB 6005? Representative Daniels, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, I would like to thank you for taking on this great bill. It's close to my heart. You know, I just, you know, get touched by stories like this. This is so serious. You know, 37 years, and, you know, I'm up on this bill like I'm all in. I want to be a sponsor, Prime, if it's available. Let me be clear, there is no amount of money that could truly compensate Mr. Du Bois for what he has experienced. He did someone else's time and 3 years on death row. So I know that we get it, but I think that we should be sensitive that this happened every day. And this is one of the things that makes it so great being a part of the legislature to see this awesome thing happen. I know I'm talking ahead, but I just believe that this bill is going to fly through because we, you know, we care. And I know that Mr. Du Bois has been through so much and he needs to be compensated. We really need to celebrate the Innocence Project. We need to do everything that we can to support them and make sure that they can do more cases like this, because I had the privilege of sponsoring the Clifford Williams claims bill a few years ago. And with without the petition of the Innocence Project to the Criminal Review Unit, this might not have been where it is today. So and I'm just grateful that Mr. Du Bois has the best attorney in America from my city to represent him. So I'm just glad to be a part of this, and I just thank God for cases like this and bills like this that can give back when people have suffered great loss.
Further debate? Seeing none, Representative Duggan, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think you can see that a manifest injustice occurred here, and the state must do everything that it can to address it and correct it. The judicial branch has done its part. They identified the error, and they set him free. And as Representative Daniels alluded to, it's now our turn to do our part. This is our role, and we need to apologize, and we need to provide compensation. And that's what this bill will do, and I ask for your favorable support.
Representative Duggan, having closed in his bill, Julia, please call the roll on HB 6005 and announce the vote.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show HB 6005 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you all.
Our fifth bill by our very own Representative Overdorf. HB, you're recognized to present HB 331, liens and bonds. It looks like you are presenting from the podium. So when you are ready, Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Members, I promise there's no crying during my bill. We are talking about liens and bonds. Uplifting, happy, joyful liens and bonds. Here we go. So the bill in front of you today, liens and bonds, deals with a variety of uplifting and very interesting topics. This includes the clerk of court must serve a copy of the contractor's notice of contest of bond claim on the claimant and liener. If a payment bond is not recorded with the notice of commencement, the liener or claimant will have up to 45 days to serve preliminary notice once they are served a copy of the payment bond. Other fund items that we look at during this bill include it allows the discharge of a construction lien to be whole or in part. It adds construction management services to the definition of a contractor. And finally, it provides additional time to record a construction lien when we are in an emergency situation and documents and when documents are not being recorded. But wait, there's more. I do have an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the representative on the bill? Seeing none, you are recognized to explain amendment barcode 305063.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much. Primarily in this amendment, it corrects a variety of issues that were noted during drafting. It also increases the threshold of the notice of commencement from $2,500 to $7,500, and that is the amendment.
Any questions on Representative Overdorf's amazing amendment? Seeing none. We have public appearance cards from David Shep, independent electrical contractors, who waves in support. That's all I have. Members, in debate? Seeing none, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to close in your amendment. You're recognized to close in your amendment, Representative Overdorf.
I uplifting wave, Representative Saroy.
Have you Representative Overdorf, having closed in his amendment, all signify by saying aye.
Aye.
They're in support. Anyone opposed? Show the amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Public appearance cards. Melissa Ramba, National Association of Credit Management Improved Practices Construction Committee, I think I said that right, waves in support. David Ramba, Florida Concrete and Products Association, waves in support. Doug Bell, Associated General Contractors, waves in support. French Brown, Real Property Probate and Trust Law Section. Sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be extremely brief. My name is French Brown here on behalf of the Real Property Probate Trust Law Section of the Bar. Just really want to thank Representative Overdorf. We've been working on this bill for a number of years. The Real Property Probate Trust Law Section has a provision where we're trying to streamline the process whereby large construction projects can get refinanced or change title without having to fully shut down all construction. That's a concept we call start-stop that's in this bill, and we think it's a very important piece. But thank you so much to this committee, and thank you so much to Representative Overdorf. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, sir. That's all the public testimony we have. Members, we're in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to say thank you to the group that put this together, and literally it's been a several-year effort. Thank you to Warren Husband, to French Brown, and, of course, to Melissa Ramba for all of their work. Thank you, sir.
Representative Overdorf, having closed in his bill, Julia, please call the roll on HB 331 and announce the vote.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show HB 331 reported favorably as amended. Congratulations.
Thank you, committee.
And last up, committee, for our consideration today, HB 87, lactation spaces in courthouses. Representative Gant, you're recognized to present your very first bill in the Florida House of Representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair, Ranking Member Arrington. It is an honor to present HB 87 that will require certain Florida County courthouses to have dedicated lactation spaces. And there are a few exceptions, which I will discuss. Having this dedicated space would mean a private, clean, and accessible space to nurse or pump breast milk, whether for attorneys, jurors, courthouse staff, or courthouse patrons. By providing breastfeeding mothers a clean and safe space, lactation rooms remove a barrier for women returning to the workplace. The Florida Association of Women Lawyers, commonly referred to as FAL, has worked to promote lactation room legislation and this bill as part of their lobby days for a few years, including this year. The proposed lactation room legislation is in line with recent federal legislation. As recent as December 2022, Congress passed the Pump for Nursing Mothers Act with strong bipartisan support, providing lactation spaces in the workplace. Lactation rooms are also required in large and medium-sized airports, and we also have one here in the Tallahassee Airport, and sometimes they are pods or suites. This legislation prioritizes the health and welfare of Florida working families and recognizes the health, economic impact, and contribution of working mothers. State-appropriated or private funding may be used to provide a lactation space. And the exceptions to this bill, which I alluded to earlier, are that if there's new construction required or if the person responsible for the operation of the facility deems that it cannot be done through reasonable costs or there's no space to accommodate the lactation space being created, then they don't have to have a space. But the legislative purpose is that we do create a lactation space in the courthouses, and there are several circuits around the state of Florida that currently have one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Representative Gant on HB 87? Seeing none, we have an amendment. You're recognized to present Amendment Barcode 172653.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment basically lays out the definition in points A, B, C, and D. So instead of it being one sentence, it lays out the points, and then it rearranges the wording of the exception. So it moved subsection B to A and A to B to make the two-prong analysis for courthouses to be able to qualify for the exception.
Any questions on Representative Gant's very first amendment in the Florida House? Seeing none, public appearance cards, we have none. Members, we are in debate. Representative Campbell, you're recognized in debate on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you for presenting this bill for us today. As a man, you realize the things that you don't see. And this for me, just talking about me, I'm running around. Would not have thought in a million years to think of a lactation center. But definitely this is something that is needed. And the fact that you have slowed us down to see that this is something that we have to have in the court systems is a testament to your intelligence and your ability to advocate on behalf of all women. And so I recommend my colleagues here on this committee to vote up on this wonderful bill.
Thank you, Representative. We are, though, on the amendment. So we're debating. That's all right. I won't let you say it twice, though. Representative Daniels, would you like to debate the amendment? We're on the amendment. Anyone on the amendment? Representative Gant, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive close.
Having waived close, all members in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Public appearance cards. Barbara Devine, Florida National Association for Women, waves in support. Allison Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waves in support. Arlene Colin-Larari, National Latina Institute for Reproductive Justice, waves in support. Mary Daly, waves in support. Joanne DeVries, waves in support. Rose LaChapelle, Democratic Women's Club, waves in support. Jean Seinelberger, waves in support. Tiffany Cruz, Florida Association of Women Lawyers, waves in support. It's all the public appearance cards that I have. So members, we are in debate. Ranking Member Arrington, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative for bringing this bill forward. This is our first one, and very proud of her. And then also want to thank you, Chairman, that I don't want to jump the gun, but I think this will be a unanimous yes, that we're going to have all yeses on all the bills today. So thank you for bringing some, putting some good bills on the agenda and for getting some Democrat bills on the agenda, too. Very much appreciated.
Representative Overdorf, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you for very smartly picking this bill as your very first bill.
Representative Daniels, you're recognized in debate. Would you like to debate, Representative? No, you're good. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to make anyone debate. Representative McFarland, you're recognized in debate.
As a mother who is on track to have 3 babies in 3.5 years, and I have jury duty upcoming in July in Sarasota, where it will be very hot, I am glad that I won't have to pump in my car. So thank you for this bill. I have a personal stake in it.
Representative Saroy, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative, great bill. Congratulations. I hope you'll keep the committee members abreast of its progress throughout the process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I wish bad jokes were against the rules. They aren't. Representative Roth, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Representative, for this good bill. I think this is a very good common sense bill. As a grandfather with several grandkids, I have to tell you this issue we're dealing with today brings those women that are fortunate enough to be able to do this and go back to work and take care of their kids. This is really good mental health. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to anyway. I have a grandchild that was nursed for over a year, and it was a very special, obviously, a relationship between mother and child. So congratulations on your first bill.
Further debate. Representative Michael, you're recognized.
Representative Gant, we talked about this. I'm totally behind this. Having children, I'm not going to age myself, but before these stations were a known thing, it was very difficult to find a place of privacy to nurse your children. And some people are just not understanding when it comes to things like this, because they are, you know, they just nurse anywhere. But when you are someone who is you recognize the sacredness of the bond that you create between a mother and a child just to be able to nurse them. I appreciate this, and thank you for bringing it forward. And I'm happy to support it. Looking forward to saying yes. Thank you.
Representative Maney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. Representative, I want to tell you that you're very fortunate. This House at sometimes has had a tradition of harassing members during their first bill presentation. And I want to thank the members and the chair for not doing that today with any of the freshmen who presented, and tell you you're very blessed. So you've got a committee that's very supportive, and that's wonderful.
Further debate. Seeing none, Representative Gant, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank all the members of the committee for speaking with me, for having a conversation and discussion with your concerns about the bill. Over the years that I've been an attorney, I've volunteered with voluntary bar organizations, and every year we've heard a story from either an attorney, court staff, or someone who was at the courthouse who needed to nurse or pump and were brought to tears because they didn't have that private space, they had to go to their car, or they had to leave the courthouse in general. So this bill is very important to support families, working mothers, and it has an economic value where we can have qualified employees to do jobs, and they don't have to choose between providing for their families and going to work. So thank you for your support. I appreciate it, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gant, having closed in her bill, Julia, please call the roll on HB 87 and announce the vote.
Representative Arrington.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McFarland. Michael.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Chair Robinson.
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show HB 87 reported favorably as amended. Well, as ranking member, congratulations. Thank you. As ranking member Arrington mentioned, we had 6 bills, 6 unanimous votes. Let's see if we can keep it up next Friday. See you next Friday. There's no further business. We have concluded our today's agenda. Representative Gant moves we rise. Unless there's an objection upon the motion, Representative Gant, the meeting is adjourned.